All right. Rob, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was totally his doing, pretty much, for the most part anyways. I know you guys have talked about having me come down here and give a speech for a while, and I'm glad that we're able to do this. I ran into you guys at the Earth Day Festival, and you guys are always very, very inspirational. The San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group, I always got to tip my hat to you guys because you guys are definitely one of the most active, dedicated, professional, responsible 9/11 Truth Groups out there in the whole country. I think that's very safe to say, right? Does anybody else know of any 9/11 Truth Groups that are doing the work that you guys are doing on a monthly basis, weekly basis, it seems like? You guys are always out there in the community engaging, and it's something that I've always really appreciated, and I know a lot of people that care about 9/11 Truth do as well. So, Rob, thank you. San Diegans for 9/11 Truth in general, thank you guys for having me. I was kind of joking before, this is the first time I've given a public speech in quite some time, probably all the way back to when I was in college, so forgive me if I'm stuttering or getting a little nervous. I'm trying to make this as informal and conversational, really, as possible. So if you have any questions throughout my little speech here, raise your hand. I can clarify anything or address your question, no problem. Really, what I wanted to focus on was my background, my thoughts on 9/11, the conclusions that I've come to, and, of course, why it all matters. That was originally what we were going to talk about. Why is 9/11 still relevant today, almost, 20 years after the fact? So just to kind of get started, when 9/11 happened, I was, I believe, a sophomore in high school. Wow. Yeah, 2001. Yeah, definitely would have been a sophomore in high school. I was always really interested in history and politics and government, in the media and journalism and newspapers. I woke up every morning and read the Omaha World Herald. I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska. And I would wake up every morning and read the whole thing. I was like a big newspaper junkie. And I still am to this day. As Rob mentioned, I write for American Free Press. So I've always been interested in these subjects. When 9/11 happened, you know, I was so young. I didn't really understand what was going on, didn't recognize the significance of it until probably I got into college. And ultimately, when I came to my first meetup here at the Joyce Beer Center, I went to school in Nebraska. I went to the University of Nebraska at Omaha and got a Bachelor of Arts degree in International Studies, which was pretty much political science. I took a lot of political science classes, a lot of history classes, a lot of geography classes, classes like this. And the International Studies department was like its own separate college at the university. So it was a pretty cool experience. A lot of really good professors. I think it's safe to say I got a pretty solid education at a public college, public university. Had a really good time. I studied abroad a couple times. I was over in Europe in 2006 and kind of got to travel around Europe. I did a 2-week course in Italy where we were focusing on human rights from a multidisciplinary perspective. So there was professors from all over Europe, and they were in political science, geography, economics, and a number of fields. So it was a really interesting experience. There were students from all over the country. Actually, mostly they were European. There was only a couple Americans besides myself. And then there was quite a few students from Australia. So it was a very international experience and a great time. Studied in Italy for 2 weeks, as I mentioned. It just so happens the World Cup was going on at the time. And that year, Italy actually won it. So I was in Italy when they won the World Cup, which was like a incredible once-in-a-lifetime experience. I don't know if you guys are into soccer. I really am not, and I wasn't at the time. So I was kind of this clueless American showing up in Europe. The World Cup's going on, and everyone's going crazy. And I'm like, what's going on? This isn't football. You know, this isn't baseball. So, no, it was cool, though. It was a really cool experience. And, boy, the Italians, they were partying that night that they won the World Cup, that's for sure. And so it was a really cool experience, very educational experience. In 2008, I went to Peru and I studied abroad in Peru, studied in Lima, the capital city, which is this big, huge metropolis. And that was also a very cool experience. After the course that I did, I took a flight to Cuzco, which is in the mountains down there, right near Machu Picchu. And eventually took a hike to Machu Picchu, which was also a very cool experience. And I'm saying this just to show that college education is very important. You can learn a lot, get a lot of good experiences. And I hope kids now in school are doing the same thing. I don't know. Things have changed quite a bit, where now it's all about learning about the Holocaust and, you know, all sorts of other topics. So needless to say, I had a good experience in college. Shortly after, I moved to San Diego. I moved to San Diego in July of 2009. And it must have been only a few weeks before I came to my first San Diegans for 9/11 Truth meeting. In fact, I was going to ask, maybe some of you guys that have been involved for a long time, does anybody remember off the top of their head when Dylan Avery gave a speech here? We presented Loose Change. And then, of course, afterwards, there was a Q&A. Do you know off the top of your head when that was? I'm thinking it was either in September or October of 2009. Anybody have any idea? It was around then anyways. It was shortly after I moved to San Diego. And when I was in college, I was involved in a group called Progressive Omaha, which was like sort of similar to this, but focused on progressive issues. They were very anti-war, very anti-Wall Street. At the time, the whole Wall Street bailout was going on, and that was a big topic. And it was like a weekly discussion group, basically. And so I would go to these pretty much by myself. Most of my close friends were not as passionate and as interested in politics and history as I was. So I would go to this event, or go to these events pretty much on a weekly basis. And I was looking for something similar to that when I moved to San Diego. And I just went on Google and typed in activist group San Diego or something like that. And the 9/11 Truth group popped right up. And so I attended. And I had never really thought about 9/11 at the time. I was very, I guess you could say progressive, for lack of a better word. Anti-war, anti-Wall Street bailout. I was very critical of the two-party system all the way back then in college. In fact, in 2008, during the election, all my friends were big Obama supporters. In fact, I had a couple of my really good friends who went and worked on his campaign. And I was very critical of Obama. I was very critical of who was running at that time, McCain? I think it was McCain, yeah. And I was very critical of the Democrats and the Republicans. To me, it was very obvious that they were controlled by the same large corporate interests, special interests, you know, the pro-Israel lobby, things like this. So I was very skeptical of the mainstream political establishment and the media. At the time, I was very interested in the alternative media, which was kind of a newer thing at the time. It's certainly not like it is today, where the alternative media is really flourishing. But at the time, I was watching Democracy Now! Religiously. I love Democracy Now! I don't know, does anybody watch that still?
I used to.
Once in a while.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I used to literally like wake up at like 7 in the morning before I had to go to class and watch it, and just get on my computer and watch it every morning before I even left the house. Usually, most days anyways. It's a good news program, kind of, you know, progressive, very anti-war, very kind of left, a little too left-wing for me now. But it was a good news program. It was a good alternative source of information. And they were exposing a lot of these things, a lot of the, you know, I guess kind of the basics, how the mainstream political system is controlled by large special interests that were not working for the betterment of the people. And that was very clear to me. They drove this point home on a daily basis. I ended up volunteering for the Ralph Nader campaign very briefly. I wouldn't even say I was necessarily a volunteer. I took an interest in Ralph Nader and did a little bit of campaigning. I was never like an official representative of his campaign or anything, but he was running at the time. And he had a lot of really good ideas, was bringing up a lot of really good points. He actually came and spoke at the university I went to, and that was really cool to go, you know, hear him speak and get to, I met him very briefly and got his books, read his books, and was very influenced by him. And I was also reading Glenn Greenwald. Is anybody familiar with Glenn Greenwald? At the time, he was actually a blogger, and I was really interested in blogs too, because I thought it was so revolutionary how pretty much anybody could get on the internet, set up a free blog, and really kind of compete with the mainstream media that's so controlled and, you know, obviously pushing lies and distortions and an agenda. And so I thought it was a very revolutionary concept, the idea of blogging, setting up, you know, using the internet to set up your own website and to really kind of compete with the mainstream media. And so I was reading Glenn Greenwald. At the time, he was actually writing for Salon.com, and he was like one of their featured writers. And he had a very, very, he had a huge influence on me, on my thinking about the wars in the Middle East, about the justice system, about the Patriot Act. He was writing about a lot of these topics at the time, and still is, for that matter. So before I moved to California, I was already skeptical of the mainstream, right? I was very jaded with mainstream politics, very skeptical of the mainstream media. I guess at the time, I just didn't know how bad things really were, because I had never thought about 9/11 or many of the other topics I currently write and talk about now. So anyways, as I mentioned, I came here. I remember getting on my bike and riding up here. When I first moved here, I was living over on like 30th and B, and I got on my bike, rode up here. In fact, that was a big reason why I wanted to move to California. I wanted to be able to ride my bike everywhere. So I took advantage of that, especially when I first moved here. I was riding my bike everywhere, including here to the Joyce Beer Center. And Dylan Avery was here. We watched Loose Change. And again, like I said, I had never really thought about 9/11. I never thought that the government story was wrong or, yeah, I never thought about it really. I was just sort of, I was against the wars. I was against what we were doing in the Middle East. You know, I was learning about how we were torturing people and literally destroying entire countries like Iraq, Afghanistan. We were bombing other countries in the Middle East, and we still are, you know, what, 20 years after the fact. It's absolutely insane and so wrong and so unjust. And that was very, very clear to me, and I was very passionate about it. So when I came here and started entertaining the idea that 9/11 was not what the government and the media said, everything started to make much more sense. Yeah, like probably like most people, you know, a lot of times people just don't stop and think about it. You know, we kind of take it for granted what the media says about, especially very high profile consequential events like 9/11 or any other event for that matter. But needless to say, that day changed my life for sure. And I wanted to get to the bottom of 9/11. I wanted to figure out what happened, who was responsible, why, what the purpose of it was. And I remember leaving to go back home that night and just thinking the whole time, the government lied about this. And it just, I already knew the government was lying about a lot of things. I just never even considered 9/11. And I was totally blown away. I was actually devastated. I don't know about you guys, but like when you first realized 9/11 was a lie, it was very emotional. I mean, I was like, I don't think I was crying, but I mean, you know, it was that powerful of a thing to think about that we could be lied to about an event like this. So that's kind of my story with the Joyce Beer Center. And I've been coming to events as I can over the years. I actually don't even live in San Diego anymore, so it's much harder to get down here and attend the events. But I have been to a number of events over the years. And again, you guys really have done a tremendous job getting speakers to come in, screening documentaries, that sort of thing, and also engaging in activism. You know, we were just talking about Earth Day. You guys do Earth Day every year. Also Memorial Day, if I'm not mistaken. You guys do a big outreach type event
for
Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
So this is awesome. I, again, tip my hat to you guys, because I don't really know of any other 9/11 truth group anywhere that's doing anything like you guys are doing. So I think it's very important, and I hope you guys continue to do it. So anyways, getting back to a little bit about myself, I started blogging when I was actually in college. I wanted to write, practice my writing skills. My goal was to eventually be a teacher or a journalist. Two very difficult careers to have if you have the sorts of views that we do, right? If you're not going to get hired as a high school teacher talking about 9/11 truth or, you know, any of the other controversial topics I've addressed over the years. But I did want to at least practice writing. And again, you know, I thought that blogging was a very revolutionary way to communicate and to really kind of challenge the mainstream system. So I set up a blog and I was really kind of just posting articles and videos, mostly about 9/11 at the time. And one thing that I did that I, looking back on it, I maybe should have done it differently, but what can you do now? I was using my real name. My blog was literally John Friend's blog. So I was using my real name talking about these controversial things. And that's had some repercussions over the years. As some of you may know, you know, you can get into some trouble if you're talking about these things using your real name publicly like that. But I wouldn't take it back because there's nothing that we're doing or saying that isn't a totally legitimate perspective to hold. You know, it's not as if we're making this stuff up. We've done our research. We know what we're talking about. We're right, and we can prove it, and we can talk about it for hours. So that's kind of been my perspective, my attitude towards it all, despite the challenges and the hardships. But yeah, I started a blog, and again, I was kind of writing mostly about 9/11 and foreign policy in general. I started hosting a podcast. I was really into podcasts. Once I came to the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth Group and really started delving into 9/11 research, almost immediately I came across Alex Jones, like most people, I'm sure. And at the time, gosh, he was doing like a 3-hour radio program every day, and then like another 2 hours or whatever on Sunday. So he was like a machine. And Alex Jones, I mean, he has put out some good information over the years, no doubt. But it later came to my attention that he was withholding some very important information about 9/11 and about other topics that were critical to understanding what happened on 9/11 and primarily who was responsible. That was the main thing, the main conclusion that I came to. But that was kind of my first experience, I guess, in the alternative media where people were actually talking about 9/11. Because like Democracy Now!, Glenn Greenwald, they could be so good on so many topics, but they go along with the official narrative, which is just dumbfounding to me and frustrating, very frustrating. I remember sending emails to these people and calling them, Glenn Greenwald, Amy Goodman, like, hey, why aren't you guys talking about 9/11? Did you know that the official story is not true? And of course, you know, you won't even get a response from people like that. But I started listening to Alex Jones and doing other research, really just, again, trying to get to the bottom of what happened on 9/11. I started doing my own podcast called The Realist Report. And I was mostly interviewing people, authors, researchers, 9/11 activists, journalists, and really talking about a number of topics, including 9/11. Did anybody participate in the Occupy Wall Street movement in San Diego? Anybody? Oh, in New York, okay. Yeah, it was all over the country. But I remember Occupy Wall Street, and they were, you know, I was reading about it online. They were going to have a big meeting in San Diego. I went to that, like a General Assembly meeting, I think they called it. And I wanted to get involved. I wanted to participate in Occupy Wall Street because, one, I was against Wall Street, right? I was against the criminals that basically ripped everybody off and got rewarded for their criminal activity, for their outright fraud, right? I mean, these people were robbing people and got rewarded by the government. And that was the main focus of Occupy Wall Street, obviously. But I wanted to get involved and also bring up 9/11 because 9/11 was so relevant to what was going on in my mind, certainly relevant to our foreign policy and all the wars that we were prosecuting and still are prosecuting. And this was really kind of my first experience, I guess, in activism. You know, prior to that, I was never really like out in the streets, you know, doing anything. And I remember going down, it had to have been, I think it was a Saturday or Sunday. It might have been a Sunday. We did like a march around downtown and then we met back at the Civic Center. And you can still probably find this video on YouTube where one of the main guys, he had a bullhorn and he's up there on, you know, on like a little ledge. And he's saying, oh, anybody that wants to come up and speak their mind and talk about why you're participating in Occupy Wall Street, come on up and you know, speak your mind. And so that's what I did. I got up there. I waited in line. I was very nice and professional. I had made a sign. On one side of the sign, it was talking about the banking system. The other side was talking about 9/11. So I get up there, and I'm talking about has anybody seen this video by chance on YouTube? Yeah, okay. It's out there. You can find it. I'm talking about the banking system and, you know, the crooked bankers are robbing us, and we need to change this and change that. We need to arrest these people, I think I was saying. And I'm getting cheered. You know, everybody's like, oh yeah, we love that, good job. And then I turn around my sign and I start talking about 9/11. And instantly, you know, people start booing. There's a few people in the crowd that were kind of instigating it. And one lady, in fact, was like right there in front of the ledge. Like maybe she would be like right here if, you know, we were reenacting it. And she gets this big stick and comes up and knocks my sign down. And oh man, it was funny. Got it all on film, and it was an interesting experience. And that's when I kind of realized, oh wow, this is serious. This is a very controversial, serious topic that people are going to have problems with, right? People don't want to hear you out. They don't want to entertain what you're saying. But it was an interesting experience nonetheless. I began writing for American Free Press, which Rob mentioned. Any subscribers to American Free Press? Good job. Thank you, guys. I began writing for American Free Press in March of 2013. A friend of mine actually sent me an email. I had been following the newspaper and a lot of the people that were involved with it, a lot of the key journalists, like Michael Collins Piper, for example. I'd been, you know, following the newspaper and following him in particular. And a friend of mine sent me an email saying, "Hey, John, you should email the editor because they're hiring. They're looking for contributors." And I was like, "Oh, okay." I had no idea. So I sent him an email and he was like, "Okay." His name is Chris Petherick, by the way. He's the editor of the newspaper. Sent Chris an email and he asked me to write a story. I can't even remember off the top of my head what the first story I wrote. I think it had something to do with the Obama administration. It wasn't about 9/11. It was about another topic. But he wanted me to write this piece. I wrote it up, sent it to him, and he liked it, published it. First article I submitted, he published it pretty much without any edits. Well, I was like, okay, cool. And then it kind of became a regular thing. And I've pretty much been writing consistently for the newspaper since then. There's a very brief time where I wasn't contributing, maybe 4 or 5 months where I wasn't contributing anything back in like 2014, I think. But pretty much I've been contributing regularly. Now it's actually a bi-weekly newspaper, so every 2 weeks we publish. Prior to that, it was once a week. And it is a national print newspaper. The website is also AmericanFreePress.net. They publish a lot of the articles in the print edition on the website. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And, you know, we feature Pat Buchanan, Ron Paul, well, myself, of course. And then there's a few other contributors as well. People like Michael Collins Piper, who I mentioned, wrote for the newspaper for years. Does anybody know or heard of Michael Collins Piper? Yeah. The late Michael Collins Piper? May he rest in peace. He died a few years ago. Yeah. Say it again.
Martin Luther King
murder,
was that
Michael Collins? No, he wrote a, I mean, gosh, he was a prolific author. He wrote a number of books. In fact, I think I have pretty much every one of the books that he ever wrote. His biggest one probably was his book on JFK. He wrote a book called Final Judgment. Yeah. Yeah. Paul Craig Roberts, exactly, yeah. So American Free Press has featured a lot of sort of bigger names, I guess, over the years. And it's I'd describe it as populist, America First type newspaper, independent, 9/11 truth advocates for sure. 9/11 has always been a big topic for the newspaper, one that I focused on a lot over the years for the newspaper. Chris Bolin actually was a writer for American Free Press for years.
Yeah,
for a long time. And Chris Bolin was on 9/11 from the day it happened for the newspaper, writing for the newspaper, you know, pointing out the Israeli connections, pointing out, oh, hey, our own law enforcement agencies arrested all these guys and they're let off to Israel without even really being interrogated or questioned. What's that about, right? Mm-hmm. So Chris Bolin was covering this from the get-go for American Free Press for a long time. Let's see. Yeah, I've covered a number of topics for the newspaper, including issues relating to 9/11 and the global war on terrorism. I've also contributed to the Barnes Review, which is a bi-monthly, so every 2 months it's published, a bi-monthly history magazine. Anybody familiar with the Barnes Review? By chance, yeah. It's really, both of them really, American Free Press and the Barnes Review are outstanding publications in my mind. Print publications. Does anybody, I mean, who's printing anymore, right? Everything's online, but they're still printing. I've always appreciated print newspapers. I mentioned at the beginning, you know, I'd wake up every day and read the whole paper, my hometown paper. So I would encourage people to subscribe to these publications if you're not already. I don't know the pricing off the top of my head, but it's really not much. And they also have like online subscriptions, which are significantly cheaper. AmericanFreePress.net is the website, and then also BarnesReview.org is the website for the Barnes Review. Both the Barnes Review and American Free Press have bookstores where we sell books. And in my mind, it's really important to support organizations like this and to support independent media outlets and journalists that are out there covering these issues, because we all know everyone's getting shut down from Facebook, from Instagram, from Twitter, from even Amazon. I mean, a lot of these guys, you can't even buy their books on Amazon anymore. It's that tyrannical. So one way to kind of combat that is to support publications like American Free Press and the Barnes Review. So I'd encourage people to do that. And besides writing for the newspaper and the magazine, I also maintain therealistreport.com. I went from having a blog in my own name, which was maybe foolish at the time, to setting up like a legit website. It's called therealistreport.com. I have my business card back there. If anybody is interested, it's got my website info, my contact info, my Twitter account. I'm also on Twitter at Realist Report. I don't know if anybody uses Twitter in here. It's called therealistreport.com is the website. Yeah, therealistreport.com. That's also the name of my podcast. And then my Twitter feed is right there on the website as well, so you can follow me on Twitter. My website has all of my blog posts, all my articles. It has a contact page and my archives for all the podcasts that I've done. And now I pretty much do a regular show. Usually it's once a week, sometimes more. I also broadcast live. I do a live show on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific. And it's on a platform called Eurofolk Radio, eurofolkradio.com. You can find all this info right at my website, or just send me an email and I can send you the links and everything. Sometimes with the way my schedule works, I'm not able to actually do the live show. So I'll put a podcast in there that I've pre-recorded, and then it will go out live on the network. So needless to say, I stay busy doing a lot of this stuff, writing, researching, reading, contributing to the newspaper, helping edit a little bit, stuff like that. So it's something I'm passionate about and something I'm proud of. I think it's pretty cool to be contributing to an independent newspaper like American Free Press, one that's still going strong despite all the obstacles and all the challenges. So, okay, enough about me. I wanted to talk about 9/11 truth, obviously. And what is it? Like, what is the concept of 9/11 truth? What does it mean to you? Does anybody have, off the top there, what does 9/11 truth mean to you? Anybody want to volunteer? Yeah. A horrendous betrayal of the American people. Absolutely. The official government conspiracy theory, the official government narrative, absolutely is a betrayal to the American people. It's an insult to our intelligence as thinking, critically thinking individuals. Go ahead. Did you have one?
Well, for me, it was you can't believe politicians or the press.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead.
It's the crime of the millennia.
Yes.
It's the latest great big crime of the perpetrators of this kind of crime, which always goes back to people. We deep throat, if you follow the money, always goes back to the people in the world that control the world's money supply.
Yes.
And it goes right back to our own Bible. So our deception didn't just begin on 9/11 and goes back to Kennedy, then it actually goes back to our own revolution, which was fought over the central banks and not over a stamp act or any of these acts. I was a history major like you, and disillusioned finding out that King George III in 1775 issued an edict to the colonists the government of England was going to start printing the colonists' money. They had all printed it in their own colonies. And this was what initiated the American Revolution.
Right.
I was a top end in high school as a high school history major, as a U.S. foreign relations major in college in history. Nothing like that. No inkling of that ever entered my brain, and I was constantly confused, beset, anxious about it, actually became despondent about the fact that I couldn't understand anything that was going on in the world because it was deliberately kept out of my sight.
Yes.
I had an economics class where the first thing the teacher said when he walked up the podium was, economics isn't really a subject you're going to be able to understand. So just keep coming and you can get a good grade.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Yes.
He said that.
Absolutely.
It was true.
Yep. Eric, go ahead.
Like you, when I was in high school, history was my favorite subject. Now, talking about 9/11, the purpose of 9/11 obviously was to get the to do the Project for a New American Century, their whole plan.
Right.
They laid it all out. They said exactly what they wanted to do and destroy seven countries. They got two more to go. They're working on it day by day.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
So 9/11 is the key to understanding what they're up to.
Yes, well said. Go ahead, we'll just do a couple more.
All right, I see 9/11 as the catalyst that brought us to the global war on terror.
Absolutely. Go ahead, last two, go ahead.
Yeah, I see it as a vehicle to curtail our civil liberties.
Yep, no doubt about that.
I see it as the Pentagon Papers all over again.
Yes, yeah. Well, one thing is clear is once you start getting into 9/11 truth, trying to figure out what 9/11 is all about, because that's really what it is to me. You know, you see 9/11 truther or 9/11 truth used in a derogatory manner,
yeah,
as if, you know, we're crazy, we're conspiracy theories. Yeah, and I'll get it. I want to talk about conspiracy theories in just a minute. But it's often used derogatorily, right?
Yeah.
The concept of 9/11 truth, really at its most basic form, at least to me, is simply pursuing the truth about this event, trying to figure out what happened, why, who was responsible, how it happened even, and doing so in an honest way. But the 9/11 truther label, has anybody ever been like derided as like a 9/11 truther? Yeah, it happens all the time, right? It's used, that label is used to disparage those of us who think with our own minds about what the government and the media are telling us about what happened on 9/11. And actually, I was looking, to kind of prepare for this, I was looking at like how Wikipedia defines 9/11 truth. And it says here, adherents of the 9/11 truth movement are conspiracy theorists, a topic I'm gonna address next. Adherents of the 9/11 truth movement are conspiracy theorists who dispute the mainstream account of the September 11th attacks.
Who's saying this?
This is from Wikipedia.
Oh,
I just found it on Wikipedia. You know, very mainstream source, you know. So anyways, I say that because, again, it's used to deride us as if we're crazy or something for pursuing the truth about 9/11. And one thing, kind of piggybacking off what Wayne was saying, realizing that they were lying to us about 9/11 opened up a whole number of doors about all sorts of other topics that we've been lied to about, for me especially. I'm sure when I talk to other people, that's pretty common. You know, most people, oh, we've been lied to about 9/11. We've been lied to about Kennedy. We've been lied to about the RFK assassination. So many topics that we could talk about. Did you have a question?
Yeah, no question. I just wanted to elaborate slightly on that point. That's
yeah.
One point I was going to make is that for me, it was a proverbial rabbit hole.
Yes.
Once you fall down, once you see what kind of lies your government can tell, what kind of murder they can do,
yep,
and what kind of war that they can start around the world just because they want war to make money and gain control.
Yep.
Once you realize that, then it opens up all the other crimes that the government has been entwined with.
Absolutely.
That's huge.
Yes.
That's the door that you walk into first.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was just going to say, in answer to your recent question, that it was, I think, maybe the first time I realized there were third rail issues. It was the first time, I mean, I knew we were being censored from my friends in the music industry, but I didn't realize until 9/11 that there are subjects you are just not allowed to touch, and they're the ones that get ridiculed.
Yes.
So it's like 9/11 truth, any criticism of Israel, what is the other, you know, whatever, but there are like three or four
World War II history.
Like, yeah, you know, yeah. Where it's like you can't touch them.
Yeah,
and
oh, it's true.
And like you, I used to listen to Democracy Now! And Noam Chomsky and all these people. And then I noticed, like, they don't even weigh in on it, and then I realized they can't.
Yeah,
if
exactly.
They do, they're going to be shoved off to the side. And so
yes.
Avoiding it.
And to me, you're missing the key piece of the puzzle, right? I mean, if we could talk all day long about how illegal the wars are, how unjust the wars are, but if we're not dealing about 9/11, the event that has been used to justify all of this, what are we doing? You know, we're wasting our time. We're missing the key piece of the puzzle. And that was all very, very clear to me. You know, I was talking about how I was really already kind of skeptical of everything. I just didn't realize the extent of it. You know what I mean? So once you kind of start entertaining 9/11 truth, it does open up a number of other doors about a lot of other topics. And you have a much better understanding of how the world really works. Yeah?
You probably know about Adam Green.
Yes, yes.
He's doing fantastic work.
Yes.
I can't believe the energy that guy has to put out a video every day.
Yeah.
You know, this is incredible. I watched one of his recent videos, and I don't know where he dug this up from, but somebody did a Freedom of Information Act request for the pictures that the dancing Israelis took of themselves.
Yes.
In New Jersey, with the towers in the back. And the government responded and gave them the pictures, but the pictures were all manipulated, and all the faces were blotted out.
Mm-hmm.
The towers were blotted out, but still, we have those pictures in our hands. There are the dancing Israelis standing up there posing. So he's doing a really good job.
Yes, I agree. In fact, I actually just interviewed Adam earlier this week, yeah, on Wednesday. You can find it right on my website. I did it. My most recent edition of The Realist Report is with Adam. And I've been a guest on his program a couple times. And did you have a question? Yes.
Because
yes.
You know, like Kennedy, a little bit, he got shot.
Yes.
They shot Reagan, so I'm sitting here going, what's all this going on?
You know what? If I maybe take 15, 20 more minutes, I'll be done with this, and then we'll have a little discussion here. There's just a few other points that I wanted to kind of make here. And we were talking about 9/11 truthers, right? Conspiracy theories, conspiracy theorists. This is another one of these highly manipulated, highly weaponized terms used to discredit people that think critically about 9/11, about anything, about any topic. And if you think about it, well, actually, speaking of Wikipedia, I read that definition about 9/11 truth. Let me read what Wikipedia has to say. A conspiracy theory is an explanation of an event or situation that invokes a conspiracy by sinister or powerful actors, often political in motivation, when other explanations are more probable.
Oh.
Right? The term has a pejorative connotation, implying that the appeal to a conspiracy is based on prejudice and insufficient evidence. Conspiracy theories resist falsification and are reinforced by circular reasoning. Both evidence against the conspiracy and an absence of evidence for it are reinterpreted as evidence of its truth, and the conspiracy becomes a matter of faith rather than proof. Now, I can say for sure that the people that I've consulted, you know, when it comes to 9/11 truth, pursuing 9/11 truth, the scholars, the journalists, the researchers, the architects and engineers, the professionals that have really looked into this, these people are much more legitimate than what the government is saying, right?
Yeah.
And if you really, to me, I think it's really important to kind of understand conspiracy theories and how it's used as a weapon, right? The rise of the internet and the blogosphere, social media outlets like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, and a government and media increasingly blatant in their collusion to deceive and propagandize the American public has led to a gradual public acceptance, or at least, you know, more and more people are entertaining conspiracy theories, right? That's certainly the case for me. You know, more and more people I talk to nowadays, they're open to hearing these different ideas, these different perspectives. And really, the mainstream mass media and the political establishment, they present conspiracy theories or a conspiracy theorist as somebody who offers an alternative explanation or interpretation of reality, disputing the official narrative of a current event or maybe a past event. So it's really, if you want to break it down in its most simple term, it's really people thinking independently and critically about what the government and the media are presenting to us. Because really, they act like we are just total idiots. that can't even think for ourselves. And sadly, there's a lot of people that are kind of like that. You know, a lot of people. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people either don't have the time to really investigate this stuff, or I think also another key thing here is a lot of the propaganda associated with 9/11 and some of these other, you know, kind of controversial topics. A lot of the propaganda is very, very powerful and very, very exploitative psychologically, emotionally, and that kind of hinders people from really questioning it or thinking critically about the narratives that they're consuming. And really, a conspiracy is simply, right, two or more people colluding together to do something nefarious or do something unlawful, right? That's really all the word means. And it's worth pointing out that the official narrative explaining 9/11 is itself a conspiracy theory. And it's the most ridiculous one that you will ever encounter if you stop and think about what the government says about 9/11. And that's my next topic here. Again, from Wikipedia. The official explanation of 9/11. Again, how stupid do they think that we are, right? I mean, it's insulting. This is so ridiculous that they would just expect all of us to blindly go along with this without stopping and thinking, without asking questions. This is an insult to my intelligence. Wikipedia says about 9/11, it was a series of four coordinated terrorist attacks by the Islamic terrorist group Al-Qaeda. Four passenger airliners operated by United Airlines and American Airlines, all of which departed from airports in the northeastern United States bound for California, were hijacked by 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists. To continue that, American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175 were allegedly crashed into the North and South World Trade Center towers, respectively. Within 1 hour and 42 minutes, both of these 110-story skyscrapers collapsed into their own footprint. Give me a break. Are you serious right now? Like, this is insulting. These buildings are blowing up. These massive skyscrapers, these iconic buildings in New York City. Has anybody ever been to New York City? I mean, I was never there to see the actual World Trade Center towers. But these were the most important buildings in New York City, in Manhattan. Yeah, exactly. And they're collapsing in their own footprint, blowing up because of two airplanes? Give me a break.
I've had adults look at the pictures of the buildings blowing up. And I asked them, is the building falling down or is it blowing up?
Right.
And you can see the brain crying
into a... Yeah, the cognitive dissonance.
The brainwashing on one side, and they're looking at what I'm pointing out on the other, and just kind of the smoke's coming out of the ears. And I ask a young kid about this tall. I ask them the same question, and immediately they don't have the brainwashing in effect.
Yeah,
they can tell you right away what's going on.
Oh, that's a controlled demolition. It's blowing up, obviously. Yeah, well, it is. And again, think about it. Most people, the vast majority of people, 99.999% of people, experienced 9/11 through the television, right? We weren't there. We didn't witness it. We saw it on TV. And think about how they presented it on TV. It was this very powerful event, this very traumatizing event that was used. And think about it. Right after this is all going on 9/11, and we have people being like Ehud Barak, who I'll get into in a minute, a major Israeli politician. He was a defense minister. He was a general in the Israeli military. One of the key proponents of this idea of a global war on terrorism, right? He's one of the main guys that came up with this paradigm of foreign policy. He's being interviewed by the BBC as the towers are falling down, saying, look, this was Al-Qaeda. We need to go and invade. We need to create this this international coalition to launch a global war on terrorism. I mean, this is how it works. They traumatize the public, and then they tell them what they're going to do. And that's exactly what 9/11 was. Right, of course, yeah. It's always the Palestinians and the Arabs behind everything,
And the TV always shows over and over the planes hitting the towers, and then Bush saying, we have been attacked.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very powerful propaganda, yeah. Getting back to the official story, they allege that American Airlines Flight 77 crashed into the Pentagon. And then the final airliner that was hijacked was United Airlines Flight 93, and that allegedly crashed into a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, after its passengers took over the airplane. And there was even a Hollywood movie made about United 93, I think is the name of it. So needless to say, the official conspiracy theory does not add up. And Dylan Avery made that very clear when the first time I ever entertained 9/11 truth, or, really started thinking critically about the official story. I'm watching the documentary like, wow, none of this makes sense. How did more and more people not see this? But again, I had never thought about it. I'd never really sat down and thought about what the government and media told us about 9/11. So I have a question here. Does any serious person thinking critically accept the official narrative? No, you absolutely cannot. It's insulting. A number of questions come up just as, somebody new to this perspective, questioning 9/11. How do airplanes make buildings blow up? How does a building that wasn't even hit by an airplane blow up? I mean, this is insane. No debris. Yeah, there's so many questions about the official story. Where was the U.S. military? How is the U.S. military not involved in preventing something like this from happening? How did terrorists operating out of a cave in Afghanistan, allegedly, accomplish this feat against the most well-funded and I have capable military here in the world. I don't know how capable we are anymore, but basically a very sophisticated military, right? How are they able to do this? This is insane. There are so many problems with the official conspiracy theory. That is what it is. It's an official conspiracy theory. There are so many problems with it that it would take us all night to sit here and document them all. Not something I'm interested in doing. I've done that. I've read it. I've read about it. Learned about it. It's kind of over it at this point. Because it's, how many times have we got to go over this, right? It's just ridiculous. The official story really is ridiculous. Serious scholars, pilots, architects, engineers, and other professionals, in my mind, have conclusively disproven the official conspiracy theory promoted by the government and media beyond any reasonable doubt. Does everybody agree with that statement?
Yeah.
It has been conclusively proven that the official story is not true. I don't know exactly what happened on 9/11. I don't think anybody really knows exactly what happened, how the buildings came down, how it was really carried out. But at the end of the day, how important is that when we know the key culprits that were behind it, which I want to get into. Give me just a few minutes and then we can take some questions. When you get into 9/11 research, there's a number of sources out there on the internet. Some of them are more credible than others. Some of them are outright disinformation. Some of them are maybe on the right track, but they got this aspect wrong or that aspect wrong. It's confusing, right? It's confusing researching 9/11 or really any other controversial alternative topic, right? Because there's a lot of perspectives out there. In my mind, these are the top sources for 9/11 truth, in my perspective. Number one, you took the words right out of my mouth, Christopher Bolin, obviously, who spoke here. He's been a guest on my program. Without doubt, the top 9/11 source. He wrote a book called Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World. As I mentioned, he was writing for American Free Press, the paper that I currently write for, at the time that 9/11 happened. And from day one, he was bringing up information that was very, very relevant to what was going on, right? I mean, we literally are like arresting these Israeli agents that were tied into what was going on in New York, and nobody wants to talk about it. Actually, I don't want to say nobody wants to talk about it, because there were a lot of reports about the dancing Israelis immediately after 9/11. Carl Cameron of Fox News did this whole investigative series on it. Has anybody seen that on YouTube?
No.
Yeah, I mean, so this wasn't like a secret, but it quickly got covered up. In fact, I think it got totally taken off of Fox News' website at the behest of the ADL, if I'm not mistaken. Exactly, yeah. Pointing out the truths about these things is anti-Semitic. Yeah. But Chris Bolin, for sure, has got to be the number one source in my mind. His book is excellent. You guys has everybody seen him speak here?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Pretty much everybody's seen him speak here. Yeah, so you guys know him, yeah. And we did an interview where we talked about this at length. You can find it over on my website. Another source, excellent source, he's this Victor Thorne. He was also a contributor to American Free Press and the Barnes Review. He passed away as well. He wrote a book called 9/11 Evil and 9/11 Made in Israel. He wrote a ton of books, but those are his two main 9/11 books.
Name again, please.
Victor Thorne. Victor Thorne, yep. And those books are available from American Free Press. Excellent sources of information. It's a lot of the same material that Chris Bolin was documenting and covering. Great source. Number three, I got Dr. Jim Fetzer. Have we ever considered getting Dr. Fetzer to come speak here? Because that would be awesome. Dr. Fetzer has always been one of the top 9/11 scholars, in my mind anyways. He's pretty controversial. A lot of people don't agree with him. Excuse me. But he was a former university professor and the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And he's really focused on 9/11 a lot over the years. Before 9/11, he was a big JFK research. You know, he did a lot of research into the JFK assassination, wrote a few books about that topic. He's since kind of moved on and focuses a lot on 9/11 and other events as well. He's a great source. Dr. Alan Sobrowski.
Yep.
Yeah, another great source on 9/11. He was a former U.S. Army War College professor, and he came out flat out and said Israel and the neocons and the Bush administration were behind 9/11. Very legitimate professional source right there, as all these guys are. And by the way, everybody that I've mentioned, Bolin, Victor Thorne, James Fetzer, Dr. Alan Sobrowski, they have all appeared as a guest on my program. So you can, if you're interested, you can go back and listen to the interviews that I've done with these guys. Dr. Kevin Barrett, he's also a contributor to American Free Press and has also appeared as a guest on my program. He's another former university professor. He's an author and a contributor to American Free Press. He's a good source on 9/11. Dr. David Ray Griffin, he was kind of like the one of the original professors, scholars, questioning 9/11, doing research into 9/11. He published a number of books about 9/11. I remember reading The New Pearl Harbor, I think was the name of his book. That was like one of the first 9/11 truth books that I read. And very, very professional, very scholarly, did a very good job. Again, totally debunking the official narrative. It's just nothing adds up. He's pointing out all the inconsistencies, the outright implausibility of what they're telling us. I mean, what they told us happened just physically cannot happen in real life, right? I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to. And so he's a good source. Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, another great source. You know, these guys are professionals. They're being honest about 9/11, and they're, in my mind, have conclusively proven that the buildings could not have come down in the way that they did. There's a number of other professional organizations that are focused on 9/11 Truth. In fact, I believe, is it Ginger? She was involved with like the a 9/11 Truth group. She was like a...
She's a purser on airlines.
Okay, yeah, so like flight attendants. Yeah, flight attendants for 9/11 Truth. There's pilots for 9/11 Truth. I think, were you involved in that? Pilots for 9/11 Truth, Ted?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is that there's professional organizations that are knowledgeable about this sort of stuff and have come out and exposed that the official story just doesn't add up. Some of the main conclusions that I've come to about 9/11, just to emphasize, number one, the official conspiracy theory is virtually entirely false, and we can prove it. We can conclusively prove this. 9/11 was organized and executed primarily by a network of criminals in both the United States and Israel, who owned the World Trade Center complex, controlled the investigation and subsequent cover-up, and who expressed their desire publicly. This is no secret. They publicly expressed their desire for a global war on terror to be launched by the West against Israel's enemies in the Middle East. That's what this is all about. Number three, the official 9/11 narrative is the linchpin of U.S. foreign policy, and it's been used as the justification for both the global war on terrorism abroad and the increasingly tyrannical police state we see here at home. Homeland Security, you know, you go to the airport, you got to walk through Michael Chertoff's body scanner. I mean, give me a break. This is insane that we let this stuff go on.
Yeah.
And then the fourth main conclusion, I kind of alluded to this. How exactly 9/11 was done is still a mystery to me that is worth investigating for those that are interested. A lot of you guys have been around 9/11 truth for a number of years, and you see the bickering and the arguments and the debates about, oh, it was mini nukes or it was whatever, you know, thermite, nanothermite. To me, these sorts of debates are really not that important and really a waste of time. It creates a lot of division. People get their feelings hurt. People get in fights, and it's just kind of nasty. When in my mind, it's pretty easy to demonstrate who was behind it and what their goal was, and we see that on a daily basis now. I have a list here, I'm almost done, and then we can kind of open it up for questions and a kind of discussion. I have a list of the top 9/11 criminals that, if I were put in charge, these would be the guys that we'd be arresting right away. And maybe you guys will have some suggestions or some additional ideas. But these are mine. Number one, Larry Silverstein. Everybody, I'm sure, is familiar with Larry Silverstein. He acquired the World Trade Center complex. And a lot of people don't get this. The World Trade Center was not just the two big buildings, WTC 1 and 2. It was a complex of buildings that was originally kind of owned and managed by the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. So it was managed by pretty much a government agency, right? It wasn't privatized. It was privatized in this very mysterious, suspicious scheme involving other Jewish criminals, frankly, that had ties to Israel, that had ties to the global Zionist network, of which Larry Silverstein was involved in this. So he acquired the World Trade Center complex in a very suspicious deal. Shortly before 9/11, he took out an insurance policy specifically for acts of terrorism, right? This is like a couple months before 9/11. I don't know off the top of my head.
4 months,
yeah, it was like literally right before 9/11, right? I mean, red flag there, right? he's made billions of dollars as a result of the complex's destruction. He is a close friend of Israel. Chris Bolin used to report how, you know, he would talk to Netanyahu on the phone daily.
Yep.
Stuff like that. So he's clearly tied in with the Israeli government, the Israeli political establishment. And he was a top Zionist fundraiser. He served as a chairman of the United Jewish Appeal. He was at one point a trustee of the Museum of Jewish Heritage. And he was at one point a treasurer of the National Jewish Medical and Research Center in Denver. And this is right from, this is on the guy's Wikipedia page, right? So this is no secret. Second top, this is kind of a group of criminals. And that is, of course, the Dancing Israelis, who Eric had mentioned. Adam Green recently put out a video about this topic, which everybody should go watch. It's definitely worth watching and checking out. And there's a lot of videos you can find on YouTube about the Dancing Israelis. One thing that people don't understand, though, is that there were hundreds of Israelis arrested on 9/11 and in the immediate aftermath, directly connected to what was going on in New York. I mean, the Dancing Israelis are the most popular or well-known example, but there were many, many others. Many were accused by the FBI and the DEA and other law enforcement agencies of being Mossad agents and of being military operatives. These guys were trained in explosives, espionage. They were involved in drug running, casing federal buildings. You know, the type of guys that you would need to carry off an operation like 9/11, right? Key suspects that were arrested, investigated and arrested, many of them anyways, by our own law enforcement agencies. In fact, the famous Dancing Israelis, they were in fact arrested by the East Rutherford Police Department originally. And one of the arresting officers, what's his name off the top of my head? DiCarlo, I think was his name. Scott DiCarlo. Yeah. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. Anyways, he was one of the main officers involved in this. He was actually interviewed by American Free Press a few years ago. Well, many years ago, I'd say, by Dave Gehary, who's a regular reporter for American Free Press. And he kind of talks about his experience with all this. These guys were so suspicious, clearly knew what was going on, right? I mean, they were there to document the event, they later said. So I mean, it's like, this is, the fact that these guys were arrested by our own law enforcement professionals who did their job, right? I mean, we did our jobs. We arrested a lot of the guys that were tied into what was going on. I'm not saying that they, you know, blew up the buildings, but maybe we could interrogate them and find out exactly what they did know. That really didn't happen. Is anybody familiar with the Gerald Shea memo to the 9/11 commission? This is another thing that a lot of people aren't aware of. Gerald Shea was a private corporate lawyer, and he wrote this long memo to the 9/11 commission that you can still find online. I have a PDF copy saved on my computer, and you can still find it online. And there have been news reports at the time, anyways. There were news reports about it, but it really didn't. You know, a lot of people aren't still unaware of it, including people, you know, involved in the 9/11 truth movement. But he was a lawyer who submitted this memo to the 9/11 commission, where he was going through and citing all these FBI reports, DEA reports, talking about all these Israeli agents that were investigated and arrested. A lot of them were, you know, as I mentioned, casing federal buildings, spying on federal officials, judges, and things like this. And a lot of them were actually surveilling the alleged hijackers. At least that's what he alleges in this memo. And he submits this to the 9/11 commission and falls on deaf ears, basically. Why is there no media coverage of this? Why don't people know about this? Why do people not know that we actually arrested a lot of the suspects that were clearly tied into what was going on? That, to me, is unacceptable. I mean, we had these guys, and we let them off the hook back to Israel, thanks to another top 9/11 criminal that I'll get to in just a second. One final thing. Adam Green, he did a video that we had talked about, talking about this, talking about the dancing Israelis. And there's a lot of good information you can find online about it. Next, two top 9/11 criminals, and these guys are Israelis, Benjamin Netanyahu and Ehud Barak. Both of these guys are longtime Israeli politicians with strong ties to America, strong ties to the West in general. I believe Netanyahu is actually, I can't remember what, he went to school here, I want to say, and lived here for years, yeah. I believe both of them served in the Israeli military. I know Ehud Barak did. Both of them have been Israeli prime ministers. They may have also been defense ministers. I know Ehud Barak was a defense minister at one point. But anyways, longtime Israeli politicians involved in the military. They are key. They were key in kind of formulating the concept of a global war on terrorism. Going back to the 1970s, these guys were kind of concocting this idea that the West needed to engage in this unending war against radical Islamic terrorists, basically to advance Israeli interests in the region. And that's exactly what the Global War on Terrorism is.
Book on it, didn't he?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Chris Bolin is a really good source on this. He wrote a book. They originally it was a conference. I believe it was in 1979. I can't remember all the details off the top of my head, but Bolin has written extensively about it, where they, again, were formulating this idea. And it later turned into a book. You're right. Yeah, he did write a book. And I got a couple quotes here. Number one, this is from Benjamin Netanyahu. And this guy said this publicly. And this is our greatest ally, right? Benjamin Netanyahu said, "We are benefiting from one thing, and that is the attack on the Twin Towers and Pentagon and the American struggle in Iraq. 9/11 swung American public opinion in our favor." That's obviously true. And, you know, the nerve of a guy like this to get up there and say that, and we point it out, and it's like an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory.
Right.
Give me a break. There's another, I don't think I have a quote in here, but there's another epic quote by a guy named Ehud Sprinzak, I think was his name, and he was like this Israeli counterterrorism official, and he said that 9/11 was the greatest public relations event in Israel's favor. Right? Pretty revealing quote right there. He's right. Pretty revealing quote. And then I got Ehud Barak. Has anybody ever seen the Ehud Barak interview on 9/11? He was on the BBC being interviewed the day of 9/11. Yeah, you can find it on YouTube, yeah. One of the quotes I have here, this is directly from that interview. "Now's the time for action, not just for interviews, and a time for action by the whole world community, coordinating a concerted effort to launch a full-scale struggle against world terror. And, you know, he later went on to kind of list the countries that we were going to go attack. And wouldn't you know, that's exactly what happened. We haven't attacked Iran yet, but yeah, right. I mean, think about what Trump is saying about Iran right now. Not just Trump, but everybody in his administration.
Israel was in the UN saying all this.
Exactly, yeah. Well, they had there's also that famous quote from General Wesley Clark.
Of course.
Yeah, where, yeah, 7 countries in 5 years. And he's talking about how shortly after 9/11, people in the Pentagon, this was the game plan. They knew this right away. Oh, look, 9/11 happened. We're starting the global war on terrorism. These are the countries we're going after. And think about all the countries that he listed. Iraq, Libya, Syria, Afghanistan, Iran, of course. Basically all the countries that we've been attacking and destroying and interfering with and, you know, attempting to overthrow their governments. And this is all to advance Israeli hegemony in the region. That's what this is all about. And if you go back and read a lot of the public policy papers written by these neocons in the West, written by Israeli politicians and geopolitical strategists, this is exactly what they were advocating. I mean, again, it's so transparent what happened on 9/11 and who is responsible and why, that it really shouldn't even be up for debate in my mind. Two more criminals, American, well, they're Zionists, but American criminals. Philip Zelikow and Michael Chertoff.
Can't leave them out.
Can't leave them out, you're right. These gentlemen were responsible primarily for the cover-up and for institutionalizing the official 9/11 myth. Chertoff was the head of the criminal division of the U.S. Justice Department on 9/11. This is the guy that basically let these Israelis that were arrested by our own law enforcement agencies, he let these guys go back and essentially escape to Israel, is what it boils down to. Philip Zelikow was the executive director of the 9/11 Commission Report, which institutionalized the official conspiracy theory as part of our public mythology. And previously, he had written about how governments should respond to catastrophic terrorism. He was writing public policy papers about catastrophic terrorism prior to his involvement in the Bush administration and, you know, heading the 9/11 commission. So these guys, I think it's safe to say, know quite a bit about what happened on 9/11 and why. Couple last points here. Topics that I've kind of addressed throughout this conversation. The global war on terror itself. And homeland security, like the concept of homeland security, right? This was, you know, a result of 9/11, the very concept of homeland security. These are Israeli inventions, right? These come directly from Israel. The global war on terror began as an Israeli paradigm of international relations. They wanted to push on the Western world in order to transform U.S. policy. And again, this is very clear. They wrote about this. They talked about it. They openly advocated for it. Homeland security itself is like an Israeli invention, right? I don't know if you guys know this, but like the drone industry, espionage and like cybersecurity, a lot of this stuff comes right from Israel. A lot of the drone manufacturers are Israeli companies. In fact, there's anybody familiar with Naomi Klein?
Yeah.
She wrote a book called The Shock Doctrine. And in that book, I think it was that book, she talks about how Israel kind of sort of transformed its economy to serve the homeland security industry leading up to 9/11. So after 9/11, they were the ones that specialized in a lot of this stuff. So of course they got all the contracts, made all the money, and it became official, you know, U.S. policy. Nonprofit security grants administered by the Department of Homeland Security go almost exclusively to Jewish organizations. And you can see this from time to time. And I follow like the Jewish Daily Forward, for example, an explicitly Jewish news outlet. And they'll have stories highlighting this. You know, of the $150 million allocated through this special nonprofit security grant, like $140 million of it goes to like all these Jewish organizations, synagogues and Jewish community centers and stuff like that. So it's really just a big scam. I mean, Homeland Security, the global war on terrorism, these are Israeli scams used to dupe us and to get us to do their bidding, essentially. The Patriot Act and a lot of these other anti-American laws, frankly, I mean, that's what they are. They're against the Constitution. A lot of this stuff has been advocated by and it even administered by Zionists involved with creating these very same paradigms over in Israel. Does anybody know who the first head of the Department of Homeland Security was? I mentioned him earlier, Michael Chertoff. Give me a break. This is insane that we could let this go on and not say anything about it and somehow be cowered as like anti-Semites for bringing this stuff up when it's right in our face. Let's see here. I just have two more slides here. Why 9/11 still matters today. The official narrative of 9/11 justified and initiated the global war on terror, which again was a preconceived, pre-concocted paradigm of international relations formulated by hardline Zionists in Israel and their neocon supporters in America and in the Western world. The crime of 9/11 has still never been solved conclusively. We still really don't know exactly what happened, and we should. We need to get to the bottom of this. That's what the FBI is for. That's what law enforcement is for, right? For figuring out and solving crimes and bringing the people that committed these crimes to justice. And that has not happened.
Mueller's busy right now.
Yeah, right. And then finally, one of the most powerful myths shaping our society today that has been used to justify the wars and the tyranny we see. That's what 9/11 is. It's a myth that has been institutionalized all throughout society. And then some final thoughts here. Really, you know, the more I thought about 9/11, the more research I did, it became very clear who was responsible for it, the key suspects, what agenda it benefited. And then I started learning more about the history of Israel, right? And it has a long history of staging false flag terrorist attacks. Yep. That's how the country was formed. I mean, go back and they were, staging bombings against the British. Exactly. So they have a long history of doing this sort of stuff. The USS Liberty, for example. So really, it shouldn't surprise us to find out that it was Israelis and, you know, their Jewish supporters here that were behind 9/11. In fact, I'm sure a lot of you guys know this, but I just want to bring it up. The Washington Post, the day before 9/11, the Washington Post highlighted a study that was conducted by the U.S. Army describing Israel's Mossad. And they described Israel's Mossad as ruthless and cunning with a capability of targeting U.S. forces and making it look like a Palestinian or an Arab attack.
Yep.
Exactly what happened on 9/11. And wouldn't you know, these dancing Israelis that were arrested, what was their first thing that they said?
We're not your enemies.
We're not your enemies. We're Israelis. We're your friends. The Palestinians are the problem. You know, I mean, give me a break. And then finally, one last comment I wanted to make, and this is a quote I'd like to read from Dr. Alan Sobrowski. And I remember, and this is a very, very powerful quote in my mind, and I remember reading it, and it really just kind of summarized everything about 9/11 so well and so succinctly. He says here, only two intelligence agencies had the expertise, assets, access, and political protection to execute 9/11 in the air and on the ground, our CIA and Israel's Mossad. Only one had the incentive using the who benefits principle, and that was, of course, the Mossad. And that incentive dovetailed perfectly with the neocons' agenda and explicitly expressed need for a catalytic event to mobilize the American public for the wars, using American military power to destroy Israel's enemies. That's what 9/11 is all about. That's what the global war on terrorism is all about. And it's crystal clear if you sit down and think about it. You know, I'm no expert in 9/11. I'm not a genius in these topics, but it's pretty clear if you sit down and do the research, once you figure out who was arrested, what agenda it's benefited, you read some of the statements that these guys were making, and some of the statements they were making the day of 9/11, like Ehud Barak, you know, basically calling for a global war on terrorism, it could not be more obvious. And with that said, I want to thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for inviting me. And yeah, let's have some questions and discussion. Thank you. We'll go to Wayne first, since he had his hand up first. Go ahead.
Talking about that as being the linchpin event, takes us to all of the crimes that the Jewish money makers have been doing against the crime was made foolproof on day one of 9/11. There were planted witnesses for one man, an actor. Oh yeah, the second I saw the explosions in the upper, I realized, you know, upper floors, I realized the heat was so hot it was going to collapse the buildings into their own footprint. He actually said words to that effect.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
What this is about, this and all of the lies on day one, is what Bolin was writing about tertiarily in not solving it, but was the main thesis statement and main thesis of his book following that, The War on Terror, which is that they got away with this. It was a sleight of hand. They got you looking over here by calling it an act of war, not a crime. If it's a crime, you send investigators in, find out who did it, gather the evidence, do all that stuff, and solve the crime. But if it's an act of war and you just know this already, then you don't bother with any of that. You just go right in there and make war on Afghanistan and all that. I mean, the very day that Barack was in London, Ehud, the other Ehud prime minister, Olmert, was sister city mayor at that time. He became prime minister later. I don't know if it was Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, but one of those two cities were the sister city of New York. And he was in New York on that day without any press coverage whatsoever. So he wasn't there as a sister city mayor. He was there as a, you know, working the crowd, working the event. So here we have, it's all set down on day one. Pictures of the 19 Arabs presented. Was it day one or was it day two? It was remarkably fast, and even the mainstream media was going, how did they get all this information so quickly?
Right. They had their narrative. They had it. Yep, they had it ready to go.
Well, we really got a good FBI. The NORAD couldn't stop bombings, but they got these things like that. So it was all set up in advance, and that's the linchpin of how they got away with it. They declared it an act of war, not a crime, therefore no investigation.
Yes, that's a good point. And so, you know...
Oh. You guys want to use the microphone here?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll set up a stack. You raise your hands, I'll give you a number. Whatever.
And you know, real quick, let me just make a comment. I remember, as you said, they basically did have their talking points about who was responsible for 9/11. They had their props, the photos of the alleged hijackers. And of course, the media and government officials were invoking Osama bin Laden. Has anybody ever read what Osama bin Laden said in the aftermath of 9/11? It's very, very powerful. I don't have it here in front of me, but I'm sure you could find it online. He was basically calling it out for what it was. He was basically saying it was a false flag. It was probably Israel behind it. So, if you're not familiar with that, check it out because it's worth reading. Go ahead.
I just watched an excellent movie about a perpetrator you left out, Dick Cheney.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh right, yeah.
It's called Vice, and it's about his life and. His work in the government for Nixon and on up and then Reagan and but anyway, it covers the device that Cheney used to get control of the government from Bush. Bush wanted him to be his vice president to give him credibility, and Cheney said, "Well, you're kind of an intuitive decision maker. Why don't I handle the boring stuff like foreign policy, the military, and the government bureaucracy?"
Right, all the important stuff. Yeah.
And anyway, I recommend the movie to anybody who wants to get a good picture of what's going on. And another thing that struck me is he got an office in the House of Representatives, or in the Senate, because he gets to cast the deciding vote in a tie. He also got an office from the Speaker of the House because he wanted to be where the money was being appropriated. He had an office in the CIA, he had an office in the Pentagon.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So he was all over the place behind the scenes making things happen.
What's the name of the movie?
Vice.
Okay, anybody else have a question or comment?
Yeah. So I'm going to go one and number two.
How you guys doing? I know you guys have been talking about Israel. The evidence I've been following it for the last few months, and I see points towards Israel, but there is a key fact that you guys haven't talked about. That's not hearsay, not secondhand information. The Saudis played a role in San Diego County. My name is in the sworn chart affidavit with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth, with Barbara Honegger, Jane Clark, and Bruce Leshy, who's representing me. I think he's working with you, trying to set something up. That all happened to me personally. I'm a native San Diego, and like I said, I've been trying to go public with this story since 2015. I met a Saudi that lived at La Costa Spa and Resort named Halim al-Rashidi in the 80s. Halim and I talked about unconventional warfare for 20 fucking years, okay? One of those conversations was using planes as a weapon, okay? In 2000, out of the blue, Halim al-Rashidi walked into my place of business in Oceanside, California, where I have 30-something employees, with a big entourage. One of the guys who was with him was Prince Bandar bin Sultan, and they made a personal introduction to me. In that introduction, Ambassador Bandar offered me $100,000 in cash. Said it three times. I told him to get the quickest no of my life, told him to get the fuck out of my store. They walked out. Less than a minute later, a guy stuck his head in the door and said, what the fuck was that all about? I didn't know who that guy was, but he was one of the ugliest people I've ever seen in my life. Told him they were talking about using the planes as a weapon, and he left and turned and walked out. Well, I didn't know who he was until years later, and I saw his ass on TV. That guy was John Brennan. A friend of mine, his name is Chris Henderson, he's a Western Regional Director of the FBI. I kept my mouth shut. They told me if I ever went public with this story after 9/11, they would fucking crucify me. I had three kids living in my house. They were my priority. I kept my mouth shut. I told Chris this story in 2015, and I was invited down to the San Diego Bureau of the FBI to go public with the story and put it on paper. We did that. After the interview, they said they threatened me with arrest. I stood up, told them to fucking do it. Puts me in a federal court. In discovery, I'll ask for two things. Oceanside was in the Little League World Series, August 2001. I was there with my whole family. My nephew was the youngest kid in the series. That was 19 months after we had the conversation in my store and I threw him out. And on a fluke, we lost to New York on August 23rd, 2001. I entered Harrisburg International Airport August 24th, 2001. Inside an airport restroom, I ran into five of the 9/11 hijackers. All of them were fucking Saudis, not Israeli. Two of them got knocked out, and the Waffle has me got cut from hip to hip all the way up to his shoulder. You could fly with a knife then. Wasn't deep enough. No police report was ever made inside of Harrisburg International Airport. Before 9/11, I got on the pit. I knew I had to call. I had 11 years clean and sober at that time also. I have 30 years clean and sober. February 6th, I haven't had a drink. Rigorous honesty ain't all that's fucking cracked up to me. I made two calls to the San Diego Bureau of the FBI prior to 9/11 from a payphone in Oceanside Harbor. Second phone call, I didn't leave dick out. I told that guy everything I thought was going to happen. I also told him if I was right, he'd be the one with a gun in his mouth, not me. He didn't do shit. He didn't watch the tapes. He didn't watch the surveillance or anything. And I told him when we get to court, two things I'll ask for. Harrisburg International Airport video of me. Second would be the recorded conversations made to the San Diego Bureau of the FBI. You guys are right about the media. You know, I thought I knew good journalists. I thought there's people I trusted that I thought I could go to this story. I haven't asked for a dime. I'm not trying to write a book. I'm trying to go into court and fucking come clean before I die. Okay? That's my motive. My kids are all grown up. They're all 18. They can fend for themselves. The families of victims of 9/11 deserve the truth. The Saudis played a role. That's why they're listed in that citizens criminal grand jury. It says Israel, and it also says the Saudis. Same with the report that they filed the lawsuit on March 25th, 2019, for against the FBI for not investigating crimes pertaining to 9/11. I never lied. I told the truth from day one. But they played a part, guys. And like I said, I never looked at Israel. I never looked at any of this stuff until 2015, because for me it was like picking a stab. And like I said, I kept my mouth shut. I knew what was at stake, and they were my kids. And that was my priority. But I ain't going to die with this on my conscience. I think Bruce is trying to set up something with you. We'll go from there.
Yeah, we could talk after this, no doubt.
The Saudis funded it.
They 28 pages. There was $77,000 in cashier's checks. There was $15,000 in a personal check coming from Vanguard. Like I said, I knew Halim al-Rashidi for 25 years. He was trying to date one of my best friends, Brian Gavin's sister. She worked at La Casa Spa Resort. He wasn't on vacation. He lived there. All this came out, and they knew what was going on. I told them about Vanguard. Initially, when they said the attack inside the airport, initially, it was, what can our country do for you? And then they asked me if it was a random attack, and I told them the fucking truth. And that's when everything fucking switched, and they said, if you ever fucking tell this story, we'll fucking crucify you. And that was because of Halim al-Rashidi and Vanguard, that $100,000 offer, and who was with them? One of the 9/11 hijackers from the Waffle House, and he was the last guy out. He stood at the door of Mad Dog before he walked out. 19 months later, I ran into that guy on a fluke inside an airport restaurant. And it was game on. And it was less than 10, 15 seconds, and I was out the door. The only reason I made the third call was because, like I said, we didn't know if there was going to be another attack. There was a woman that was standing by the door when I came flying out back first with a knife in my hand. I almost ran her over. I didn't know if she was with him or not. And they said they would have never known who I was had I made the call, because it was under construction and the cameras didn't pick up my face. I wore a long billed hat like him. I kept my head down. I went on survival mode. I didn't sing in a church choir, you know, in my youth. And once it happened, it was game on, and I didn't think about anything. I just did it. Thank you. Tell the truth.
I second that, because I did some investigation even recently about the Arabs, which, by the way, they were betrayed by the government with stealing all their petrol dollars, because they do business together. Yeah. So when 9/11 happened, I was watching the TV, just getting ready for work, and I shouted on the second plane when I saw that apparently it was a plane. Anyhow, I never believed their story. I didn't have the facts or the details, but I never believed their story, their government's side of the story, for some reason. It didn't make sense. Anyhow, recently, especially in 2015, I started investigating a lot more. Now, right now, there's two groups. According to Khalife, Alfredo Khalife, he's fluent in different languages, he's an analyst in Mexico. I just heard him talk about the two groups. I already knew about these groups, but I didn't know who were with whom, right? Although they served the same master. So he mentioned that President Donald Trump, he's with the Rockefellers, and Netanyahu, versus ex-President Obama, the Democrats, the Rothschilds, which their real name is the Bowers, and George Soros. It's a battle in between both, but you know, they play us. They serve the same master. It's a political game. Now, let's you think about what's going on with Mueller, for instance, and that I sent evidence, information that is in the newspaper from a long time ago, where General Colin Powell shows with handshaking a Russian general. They have an agreement long time ago about military exchange with Russia. So all this is just mumbo-jumbo accusations about Russians, the Russians are coming or whatever. Now, here, an ex-Nazi, whose name is Werner von Braun, And you can look him up in Wikipedia just to have a little show on this. He, in 1958, before NASA was called, I just lost it. When NASA was called NACA, the NACA's special committee on space program, this ex-Nazi was imported just to work here with Mr. Disney to create a special program, media, all the charade, so that NASA would lift up as a foundation. And it's all about money, always. He mentioned to his secretary, Von Braun, he said, first, there's going to be three wars. The first one, we're going to call it the Cold War. The second war, coming later in the future, is going to be called the War on Terror. And then there's going to be a third one, which is going to be like a war against extraterrestrials. See, do you see the whole picture now, where they are heading? Now, I don't see the war on extraterrestrials yet, not until they conquer the Middle East. And we're not talking only about these big countries. We're talking about what Brzezinski, thank God he's dead, although I don't wish they're dead, you know. Brzezinski was an analyst and an influence, technocrat, since the 70s, as you said. And they had this list in the Pentagon. Like you said, Wesley Clark knew, although he still carried on with the agenda at NATO. Anyhow, they're going after Myanmar. They're going to the small countries as well, with any excuse. Not until they do that, they will create their third war. I'm about that. But one more thing.
You can come back here. All right. Yeah, he's right about Werner von Braun and his secretary. I've met his secretary and talked with her about that stuff. So anybody else?
I just wanted to say my uncle was a New York City fire department dispatcher. And during that time, and he called me and he said, how could that, he didn't understand it. So after 20 years with the fire department, 20 years with the Coast Guard, he's calling me about it.
Yeah, her name was Carolyn Ross.
As to this gentleman here, he's talking to somebody right now, so as to him, I can just say to you about the Saudi government, the House of Saud is a crypto-Jewish family. They were go back to the Shulman family from Basra, Iraq. They are all descendants of the families that followed Sabbatai Zev, the Jewish Messiah in 1666, who was thrown out of Spain and took residence in Turkey. And Greece, and so, the British government instituted the Saud family as the royal family in 1924 in Saudi Arabia, and it was Arabia and then became Saudi Arabia. So when you're talking about Arabs being traitors to their own people, to their own Muslim people, to their own Semitic kin, in favor of these Europeans, who are not Semites, they're Jews, these Jews that from Khazaria. You're talking about a plan that went back to 1924, and it was all hatched with crypto Jews. The same thing happened in Turkey. Atatürk was a crypto Jew. His parentage goes back into the Wahhab family were crypto Jews. That's what Wahhabism, this whole fundamentalism thing, was created by crypto Jews. They create the enemy, like they created Al-Qaeda, like they created ISIS. They create the war on terror that they then make a fortune, $7 trillion. We're now more in debt to them. Well, we were $5 trillion in national debt to the Federal Reserve. Now we're $21 trillion, $7 trillion of it just for the war on terror, to get rid of their enemies for them, money that we had to borrow from their bankers, that we now have to pay, that we're now bankrupt and have no possibility of ever paying back. So anytime they want to pull the plug, they can. And all we have going for us is that the only way they get away with it is we give them our consent, because this is all fraud, and according to RICO laws, which were made for drugs, but can be applied here, any money gathered from fraudulent behavior is confiscatable, and all assets are confiscatable by the federal government of any country that's the victim of such a conspiracy, and we are that. So we have really nothing to worry about if we can just get the truth out.
One thing I want to say, when you're talking about, even just in the last couple of days with the Palestinians, you know, they were trying to broker that deal with Israel, and Trump was trying to say, take the deal or no deal with Palestinians. Well, MBS with Saudis chimed in and offered the president of Palestine $15 billion to take the deal, and he turned it down. So even the Saudis and Israel are still working hand in hand today, and it's really right out in the open if people just pay attention. But like I said, I know firsthand it's not hearsay. The Saudis had a part in it, and like I said, I'm willing to look at the evidence, and I did, and people pointed it out, and I know Israel had a part in it, but like I said, the Saudis are definitely hand in it.
Any other comments or questions? Yes, sir.
There you go. There's a lot of stuff that's being talked about right now, and I'm listening to a show this afternoon with our guest on there, and a lot of these questions that we're asking, talking about, he talked about already. So you probably want to find out how to listen to that show. And you'll get a lot of the answers that's coming forth right now.
And yeah. Check out my website. It's all right there.
I think it was a couple hours.
I'll pass it over to Dave there.
I want to comment what Wayne said here a second ago about it was a crime, not, it was an attack from a foreign enemy. It was not a crime. Making a big deal. And the irony here is this is the way I think the people who do this stuff, the so-called Zionists, the so-called central bankers, I would say that we go after them not by going through the court system. That's absurd. There's no way we can get them in court and you know, prove beyond a reasonable doubt, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If they get on the stand, they have to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Forget it. That ain't going to happen. We will never be able to pull off a court system. We can't just find them and kill them. And like you don't have to have for a foreign attack, which this is for all practical. I mean, these people basically are citizens of the world. They don't have a country. They're not citizens here. They came from a foreign land. They came over here and killed people. So we should go after them in the same way that we went after the Muslims, so to speak. I mean, using the same principle. You don't have to take them before a court of law. You don't have to have taken before a grand jury to see if there's enough evidence to go after them. We just find them and kill them. Done deal. That's what I think we should do. That make sense?
Easier said than done.
Yeah. So we're in general, we have almost half of the public knowledgeable about the charade of all of this. The problem is that we have no focused plan on what we're going to do to fix this.
Very true.
From a different perspective, I'd like you folks to consider the degree of treason involved in our government about these issues. Now that doesn't stop with the Bush-Cheney administration. That expands to the Obama administration, the Trump administration. All of these leaders of ours know the truth about this issue.
Yep.
So what is it? What power do these international Jews have over our country?
I'll tell you,
it's called the Federal Reserve System. We are in debt to these people to, as Wayne pointed out, over $21 trillion. This is an old story for the United States government, by the way. Treason is very old. Democracy failed miserably. The American people voted to stay out of World War I by electing Woodrow Wilson, who lied to them, to their face, that he would keep them out of World War I. However, again, we have Jewish interests that had infiltrated the Wilson administration and had some compromising facts about Wilson and his affair with a colleague of his when he was a college professor. Among other things, of course, he had other failings as well. But my point here is, you have someone in office who knows the will of the people. He lied his way into that office. Well, if you think it stopped there, then you go to FDR, the Roosevelt administration. The American people voted FDR into office because he promised to keep them out of World War II. Well, again, you have the same type of influence in the Woodrow Wilson administration had. You have these very powerful Jews that had infiltrated again into our government and influenced Roosevelt's behavior.
Sam the banana man.
Yes, and so if you expect anything but treason from these useless thugs that, you know, you carry their bumper stickers around in the back of your car because you think Obama is a black man, he'll get in there and he'll make such a difference. It's all farce. And until you understand this fundamental fact about our political and our geopolitical condition, you will never figure out how 9/11 has been covered up for so long.
You want to wrap it up? Yeah.
Okay, we got one more question or statement. John's got to go. He lives in Los Angeles, guys, so he's got a long ride yet. Mother's Day and all.
You have to question, you have to ask. You have to ask all these presidents in office. They come and go, but someone or someones, they remain there in the shadows. You have to screen who that is, always there, in power. Once you know where to target. We need to create, I don't know, because riots don't work, and we don't want that. Rallies, it helps, but it doesn't solve it much. That's the tendency. We need to create something else. Maybe a council, a strong council, like the one the villains have in the foreign relations, trilateral commission, something like that, to balance it out, to have a balance, equilibrium between the evil ones and us. Think about that. And yeah, now they're using movie stars, and I believe Ms. Oprah is the next president. Watch out.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Carlos. Thank you. We have one housekeeping thing.
First of all, John, this is probably one of the best 9/11 discussion groups that we've had here in years.
Cool.
Thank you enough for coming in.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Our Joyce Beers event for next month is always the second Sunday of every month. And next month, the issue is going to be the USS Liberty. We're going to be showing the movie The Day Israel Attacked America. So we will be putting all that information out. And that is next month, the second Sunday here. Two other events that I just let you know about, and you can read this when you come up there. And they're events by the Jewish Voices for Peace. And you're thinking about the Jewish organization, but they're very anti-Zionist, this group here in San Diego. And they are putting on some very, very good programs. The first one is June the 2nd, Sunday at the Chula Vista Civic Center. And the next, June the 7th, at the Episcopal Church right here in San Diego. Anyway, these are just events coming up the first part of next month. This information will be at the back. Once again, the second Sunday of every month, we're going to be emphasizing the U.S.'s liberty. And we'll let John now wind down, since you have to leave and everything, unless you can handle a few more questions.
Yeah, I think John's got to go, but thanks a lot for coming out, you guys. And come on by next month, and we'll do it again. Different topic, probably all the same, though, eh? Thanks.
Thanks, guys.